Today we are talking about environmental illness. I am really happy to have Dr. Erica Elliott with us today. She's a board-certified family practitioner and also certified in environmental medicine here in Santa Fe. She has more than two decades of experience in successfully treating people with complex and perplexing chronic ailments. She's lectured extensively on nutrition, the role of hidden food allergens, environmental toxins, detoxification with infrared sauna, along with a lot of other modalities. And she's co-author of the book, Prescriptions for a Healthy House, which came out in 2008. Welcome to the Radio Cafe, Dr. Elliott.
Thank you.
So can you explain for our listeners what environmental illness is and how it came about?
Okay, most people associate environmental illness with multiple chemical sensitivities, but that's the extreme version of environmental illness. Actually, we're almost all affected by the environment in one way or the other, on a spectrum from maybe chronic allergens to the other end of the extreme where people have trouble actually living in the world. And environmental illness first became a problem in World War I with the use of mustard gas. There was a subset of people who genetically just could not process, could not detoxify the mustard gas and became disabled from the mustard gas. And then
So this is not at all a new phenomenon.
No.
We've just given it a name now.
Yes, we've given it a name and we have more understanding of what's happening. Many people have environmental illness in one form or another, and it's misdiagnosed by doctors who don't have any training or understanding of the role of the environment. On these chronic conditions they're seeing over and over, people they can't really help, they just give symptomatic treatment, they give antibiotics over and over and over again, and sleeping pills, and antihistamines and so forth, without getting to the real underlying cause of their chronic recurrent conditions.
And what are some of the ways that it manifests, or maybe the most common ways that some of these environmental illnesses manifest?
The most common is accelerating allergies, food allergies, inhalant allergies, feeling tired all the time, headaches, chronic sinus infections, digestive problems, mood disorders, fatigue and depression and anxiety are very common and environmentally related to what people are eating and what they're breathing. And they're misdiagnosed. They're treated with antidepressants and so forth, again, without really the doctor or the practitioner determining the underlying causes of these mood disorders.
I mean, depression, this impacts so many people, not only in this country, but around the world. So it seems like so many of these things are symptoms that people experience all the time.
All the time. Now, granted, there's lots of reasons for depression. Sometimes it's situational, it's unresolved childhood issues, it's loss. But when there's no real explanation, when people feel depressed, it's very important for the practitioner to understand they need to dig deeper, they need to look at the physiology of their patient and see what kind of factors are influencing the disturbance in the brain. It's the brain chemistry can be thrown so off by chemical exposures. The chemical that's most associated with mental disturbance is pesticide exposure. That really influences brain function in quite a dramatic way.
And is there a difference between pesticide that might be on fruit or vegetables, for example, and lawn and weed pesticide?
Any pesticide, but it depends on the exposure. Pesticides in foods are in very small amounts, but they do accumulate. But it's more associated with, like, fumigating one's home or living near agriculture where there's overhead spraying or other inadvertent exposures, like to spraying lawns and so forth.
And a lot of people call some of these allergies a fad, I mean, just because we're really talking about it a lot, gluten allergy especially. And is it or is it
no,
just
it's
that
not
it's
a
more
fad.
Toxic?
It's what we're doing is our food supply is becoming not even resembling food anymore. The wheat berry has been altered dramatically so it no longer resembles what your grandparents ate, in the attempt to, quote, feed the masses and develop a high-protein grain. Many people can no longer tolerate the gluten protein. It's become very allergenic. So this is not a fad. And thank goodness practitioners are starting to consider the possibility of gluten intolerance, gluten allergies, and celiac, which are all different entities, when somebody has digestive disorders. But other foods are really disturbing the gut. GMO foods are devastating for the gut. What happens is when, like corn and soy, which have been genetically modified, most of corn and soy is GMO. What happens is, let's take corn, when it's genetically modified so that it produces its own pesticide, which is BT, which is Bacillus thuringiensis, that means when you eat it, some of your bacteria, beneficial and otherwise, incorporate that altered DNA in your gut and become little pesticide-producing factories, which is absolutely devastating for the gut, can cause swelling, inflammation, mucus production, and that in itself can increase food allergies, because if the food is absorbed before it's totally broken down, that's when allergies form. And because the body responds as though it's a foreign invader and it makes antibodies and so forth. So it's in your best interest to really research, if you're going to eat corn and soy or eat processed food where it's in as flavoring, it's in your best interest to research if it's GMO free or not. And when you eat at restaurants, you're mostly eating GMO food, because, like, the food mostly is cooked with corn oil, and that's GMO, because the restaurant, it's very expensive to use non-GMO products.
But even finding non-GMO, I mean, now, you know, there are big campaigns now to at least get it labeled, but for the most part, you don't even know. I mean, once in a while, you can see products now that say non-GMO, but do we just assume that everything else is GMO?
Yes. Oh. Because it's about 90% of soy is GMO and about 85% of corn is GMO. If you want further information, you can buy the DVD by Jeffrey Smith called Genetic Roulette, which is really give you a very clear idea of what genetically modified food is doing, not only to the planet, but to you yourself individually, to your overall chemistry.
And you have, there are different ways that environmental illness impacts people depending on total loads, yeah, acceptability. Can, yeah, you talk about these factors?
Sure. Let's say you have a room full of people and the room has recently been sprayed with pesticides, let's say chlorpyrifos, which is deadly and can cause brain damage. It would, let's say there are 10 people in the room, they would all have different responses to that exposure. Some would not even be aware that anything had happened, even though maybe subtly it was affecting them with rage disorder or feeling tired, but they would never associate it with the pesticide. They wouldn't make that association. Some would end up with increased allergies. They become allergic to all kinds of things that they didn't have problems with before, and then there'd be a small percentage, maybe 1 or 2%, who would become so extremely sensitive that they would develop MCS, which is multiple chemical sensitivity, which makes it very difficult to live in the world. And that's related to one's genetics primarily. Some people are not genetically endowed with the ability to clear chemicals well, and drugs, pharmaceuticals. And so before World War II, these people did fine because their detox system was never challenged. But now in these times, it's being challenged to such an extent that they can't handle what they're facing in the world. And those are the people who are most dramatically impacted. And so genetics play a huge role, and you can get tested if you'd like. There are companies that do testing, genetic testing for detoxification, like a Genova Diagnostic Lab in North Carolina, you could have your practitioner order a kit. Unfortunately, insurance doesn't pay for it, but you can see exactly where your problem is. And I no longer order it on my severely sensitive patients because it's so obvious that they can't detox. It's usually a methylation problem, a lack of glutathione, and superoxide dismutase problem. So they have a terrible time with pharmaceutical drugs and with petrochemicals. But it also, how somebody's going to be impacted depends on how much exposure they got and for what duration. Everybody in the end, if the exposure is big enough, like with sarin gas, everybody 100% will be affected.
And what is masking?
Masking, let's take cigarette smoking. If there's a chronic smoker and you ask that person, are you affected by smoking? And they say, no, I don't have any problem with it. And then they stop smoking and they feel actually much better. And then when they're around cigarette smoke again, they can't bear it. And so while they were smoking, they were masked, meaning they were having problems, but their brain had adapted to the problems they were having, and they only realized how very damaging the smoke was after they've cleared out their body, they've detoxed, and then they're around it again, and it's insufferable. I'm sure you've heard of people like that who say, they can't stand it after they've given it up.
Absolutely, and the body is an amazing organ that probably is trying to detoxify from the time we were born, right?
Yes.
So at this point, it's also this, it's compounded. All of these things have built up in our system. So when you talk about some people can't even be detoxified, how does that process go? How does one do this?
Okay, then you do it with, you help out the liver by doing sauna, but you have to do sauna very carefully. And if your practitioner recommends sauna and has no training, you can actually hurt yourself. If you remove the toxins too fast and you're genetically impaired, you're going to repoison yourself. So an infrared sauna program has to be done very gradually over time. And even though you're enthusiastic and want to get this stuff out of you quickly, you have to go slowly if you're genetically impaired. And you support the liver by giving certain things like precursors to glutathione, which is the main substance that is used to detoxify. You give methyl groups like methyl B12, methyl trimethylglycine, and so forth. You offer the liver the substances that it's lacking, and so you support the liver that way, and you do your best to avoid toxins. And diet plays a gigantic role. People don't totally get that what they put in their mouth dramatically affects their health. And Americans don't do a very good job with their diet, and a lot of it has to do with the food industry, what they've done to our food. In the time of your grandparents, they didn't have to do really anything. Everything they ate was not that bad. I mean, they didn't have to buy organic food because it was organic. And the food industry hadn't really damaged the food back in the days of your grandparents.
So if somebody doesn't like a sauna, because you're referring to this, I can't stand saunas, is this really the only way to detox?
Probably if you're doing well, that you don't need sauna, and you can just exercise, because every time you exercise, you're detoxifying, because the lymph system only works with movement. You have to move your body to make the lymph system work, and the lymph system is important for detoxification.
Now, you've been called a health detective, and on your website, you present these cases with patients who are suffering from various, you know, host of ailments, and including depression. Both of them seem to have heavy depression. So can you talk about some of these cases and how you go through a diagnosis with somebody?
I will. I'll give you a very dramatic case of a woman who was suicidally depressed, and she had no reason to be depressed. She was seeing a psychiatrist twice a week, and for 3 years, and was on multiple antipsychotic, antidepressant medication, and it didn't help at all. She had spent enormous amounts of money and psychological energy trying to get well, and it got nowhere. somebody suggested it might be environmental. And so they referred her to me. And she was so fed up by the time she saw me with doctors that she wasn't very friendly or open to what I had to say. And so I said, would you just humor me and get your house tested for mold? And she came back and said that was really expensive and it was negative. And she wasn't very open to continuing testing. And I said, please just, you know, because I have a feeling that this is environmental because you've had no reason to be depressed. You got depressed at a certain time when nothing was going on in your life. You had no loss. You didn't change anything that you knew of. And so we really have to look at the environment. Would you please hire this company, not the utilities company. They're not that careful. But this company, checked for gas leak. She had a gas leak, got it fixed, and she got better. And she was furious that the psychiatrist didn't think of environmental stuff. And I said, it's not her fault because she's not trained in environmental medicine. Unfortunately, I had a dream of educating psychiatrists to consider the environment when they treated their patients. But nowadays, most psychiatrists just give drugs. They're really not doing therapy. And so, because if in therapy they could include questions about the environment and not automatically assume it's unresolved childhood issues.
Well, and we always go down that, and there's such a range of depression as mean, from really massively to just feeling a little out of sorts and you don't understand why.
Right.
You actually have some dramatic and heartbreaking stories of people having babies coming and they do all they can. They want to make a new nursery and they repaint it and they put carpeting in, and it's devastating. Can you talk about one of those?
Yeah, I've had patients who were so excited about their baby coming into the world that they wanted to do very special things for this baby that was on its way. So they would totally remodel a room and buy all this new stuff and new carpet and paint with oil-based paint. And the baby would come into the world not well at all, full of eczema, allergic to everything, even the mother's own milk. And to get that baby back to health is really challenging. It means the parents have to completely get educated about what's going on. And that's how the book came about that I co-authored with an architect. We were on a walk in 1995. The first edition of the book came out in 98. This is the third edition. We're taking a walk and we're talking about how tragic it was that people build their dream home or remodel and then they're never again well because of all the toxins they've introduced. And so we felt it was so tragic that we could do something about it and educate these people so they don't destroy their lives while they're building their dream home.
And talk about your personal experience with that, because you write about that in the book. The book, again, is Prescriptions for a Healthy House. This is Dr. Erica Elliott. Tell us about your experience.
I worked when I was a conventional doctor many decades ago. It's hard to believe I was once a conventional doctor, but I worked in a health maintenance organization clinic, and it was a sick building, and I had no training in environmental medicine, so I couldn't understand why I was feeling so terrible, depressed, tired. I was a world-class athlete, and yet I could barely get out of bed. I had never had pimples in my life. Suddenly, I had pimples at age 40, and I had all kinds of problems, but being of good Swiss heritage, I just kept hanging in there and trying harder, and I got sicker and sicker and sicker. And finally, it was actually a patient who pointed out that I probably had sick building syndrome. He was came in for an appointment, and he said, Dr. Elliott, what's wrong with you? And so he's the one who gave me the book about, it's called Tired or Toxic by Sherry Rogers, and he told me I need to get out of there really quick before I became completely disabled. And so he saved my life.
Wow.
And that's when my life changed, and I studied environmental medicine so I could get well and then help other people. And so anyway, what happened with the building, they pesticided with a pesticide that's been banned now because it's known to cause brain damage, and they did that once a month, and because I kept a diary, and once a month I felt like I had the flu. And I thought, wow, when I started learning about environmental medicine, I reviewed my journal, and there it was. And also, my office was next to the procedure room where it wasn't ventilated. They used something called glutaraldehyde, which is in the formaldehyde family, which is terribly destabilizing for the immune system, which accounted for why I was having all these sinus infections and respiratory problems and rashes and pimples and so forth. And it came right into my office, and it explained why in my journal I said every plant that I brought into my office within 2 weeks started to die.
Oh my gosh, that's dramatic.
That's dramatic. And then the other thing is the HVAC system, heating and ventilation, was not constructed correctly. So when the wind blew from the west, it funneled all the pollutants from the exhaust back into the building right near my office. And so I was getting it from all sides. It was disgusting, that building.
And so, I mean, anybody who is in the process of building a house or considering it, I mean, this is an incredibly useful book, Prescriptions for a Healthy House, that you should consider, again, even if you don't feel you have any kind of environmental illness, to offset environmental illness, because it seems the materials that people use, just as a matter of sorts, can be incredibly toxic. I mean, not only the pesticides.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is a way of really looking at it bit by bit. I mean, you go through the chapter, all these different sections of building material and how to put them together. And
the message that I want to leave to the listening audience is not one of despair and overwhelm, like, oh my God, you know, how can we live in the world? But it's one of learning skills to navigate this world. And if you don't want to become an activist, but at least learn skills of how you can survive in this world and be healthy and happy. And there are ways, but you have to get educated about what to eat, what you're breathing, what you're drinking, and also how your brain works.
Well, I want to also touch on mold, because I think that's really prevalent in so many houses. And I think we assume here that it doesn't exist because we live in the desert.
Here's the rundown on that. We attract some of the most deadly moles around because they have to compete for food and water, which is limited in the Southwest, in the desert. So in order for these moles to survive, they're just like people. They become very aggressive to compete. So how they do it is they produce deadly mycotoxins. And people don't understand that about mold. They think mold just causes allergies, sneezing, and so forth. No, the deadly strains like Stachybotrys, Aspergillus, and so forth, they produce mycotoxins, which are deadly chemicals. They are chemicals. It's just like a pesticide or so forth. And that causes, that kills other molds and bacteria. And that's how penicillin works, to kill bacteria. Penicillin makes a mycotoxin, but it's not harmful enough to hurt us, but when we take penicillin as an antibiotic, but it kills the bacteria. But these other strains are really deadly.
And so where do they exist? Where do
they come? What happens is we have flat roofs here, and they leak. And so wherever there's chronic water, there's mold. That's the law of life. So if a place has been damp for 48 hours or more, guaranteed there's mold.
And you have this paper on your website that cites, and this is in Texas, but in 2002 there were 10,000 mold-related cases pending in U.S. courts. In the same year, insurance industry paid out $2 billion in mold-related claims. This was in Texas alone. So this is huge. I mean, houses
are
just
huge, and now insurance companies are not paying, many of them are not paying for mold because the expenses are so great. You can say you have water damage. So here's a tip if you want to get insurance reimbursement. You don't mention the mold part. You mention water damage, water leaks.
is everybody listening to that who has it? I know that there have been a lot of cases here. Friends of mine actually have had to go through court and get in fights with landlords over that. And it should be taken out. And there are people who can come and take it out, or does it mean removing your entire roof and putting a new one on?
In order to be healthy in your house that's been damaged by mold, it has to be remediated properly, or else you'll never feel well in your house. And there are companies who know how to remediate properly, and it has to be done hermetically, sealing off the area, because the spores go everywhere, just like cigarette smoke. If somebody's smoking in one end of the house, it's going to go through the whole house and you're going to smell it. So it needs to be sealed off and remediated properly. And unfortunately, it's expensive to remediate properly so that you can go back and live in your home.
I'm speaking with Dr. Erica Elliott. She's a doctor of both family practice and environmental medicine, also the co-author of the book Prescriptions for a Healthy House. So if somebody suspects that they have environmental illness, you mentioned that they could go and get tested. And you actually have a whole list of different places on your website of resources that people can go to, books as well. And here they could also go to you, obviously. But what should people also pay attention to in their own bodies and in their own sense if they suspect something?
Okay. If you, for example, are getting any kind of recurrent problem, it's in your best interest to investigate. If you're getting sinus infections over and over again, you need to figure out why. Do you have fungus in your sinuses from taking too many antibiotics? By the way, most sinus infections are not bacterial. They're usually viral, and they're given antibiotics, and then it causes fungal growth, and then that causes recurrent sinusitis because the body's trying to fight the fungus that grows in our sinuses. So any recurrent thing, recurrent bronchitis, recurrent pneumonia, recurrent sore throats. Recurrent sore throats often is dairy allergies. Recurrent earaches in children, dairy allergies. Think of that. Tonsillectomy, you probably had a dairy allergy. And digestive problems. So it's hard to find practitioners that really understand these things. Often patients have to, if they can't get in to see me or the other environmental doctors, they have to piece out who's good at what, like who's good at digestive problems, who's good at nutrition, who's good at dealing with allergies. And often non-environmental doctors, they have a little piece of the picture, you know, detoxification or something. But again, if they don't have a broad understanding, there's some doctors who do specialize in detoxification, but they do it too aggressively, and then the patient gets actually worse. And so it's important that you go to somebody who does have some understanding of the people who are severely impacted by chemicals.
Now, a big question that I have, and I'm also, the next segment is going to be on nuclear weapons, Fukushima and the oceans. I mean, some of the news reports I read are just terrifying, and I think about fish. A lot of people here eat it. Is it safe anymore? I mean, is our food system even the oceans?
No, in the West Coast. You know, I used to have all my patients stick to Alaska salmon, halibut, and cod, and I can't endorse it anymore because I've seen what the wildlife biologists have seen, the sores on the fish, the oozing, the high levels of radiation in the fish itself, and learning about the polar bears getting alopecia areata, which is what people get when they have autoimmune disease and they lose big patches of hair. And so I can't say it's safe to eat fish. If you want to go back to eating Atlantic fish, I used to say don't eat that because it's too polluted. Farm fish, forget it. And so I think you have to really...
Grow some sprouts or something, right?
Yeah, or get protein from other sources.
Oh, no. Well, Dr. Elliott, please leave us on an up note then with this. Now that there's nothing we can eat,
give you on an up note. There are ways to feel really good. You just have to get some skills about how to eat properly, and there are people who can help you with that, and how to, what are the things to avoid, to look out for, and so forth. So it is possible to be really happy and healthy and raise a healthy family if you get some tools.
I know Michael Pollan in his book about food rules has this one, don't eat anything that your grandmother wouldn't recognize as food.
Absolutely.
And I always thought that was a really good rule.
Absolutely. And there's certain principles that apply to everybody in terms of food. One is organic if you can afford it. Two is do some source of some form of protein and plant-based fat with every meal, like beans or nuts and seeds. It doesn't have to be a lot. Plant-based fats is things like nuts and seeds again, avocados, coconuts, coconut milk, and so forth. And fall in love with vegetables.
Fall in love with vegetables. That's a great note to end on. This has been Dr. Erica Elliott. Your website is www.ericaelliott2lsandtwotsmd.com. Thank you so much for being with us today. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'll have Jay Coffin, the Executive Director of Nuclear Watch New Mexico.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.